This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable. All right, everybody. His name is Kyle. My name is Dan, and this is the Man Therapy Podcast. And do you ever change your tone of your voice sometimes to get your point across? Like, you know, like right now I have this, I'm talking normal, but do you ever go, "Hey," to get a, like get your kids' attention or talk deeper to make them fear you?
Totally.
Okay.
Good. Oh yeah. Oh, absolutely. That, I think that's got to be a ubiquitous dad thing. I mean, there's the dad voice. Everybody knows the dad voice.
Hey. Yeah.
Hey. Yeah. How you doing?
Make it sound serious.
What's that guy's name? God, I forget his name. He was on Landman. He was on one of the, he was in Tombstone as the oldest brother.
Yeah.
God, what's his name? God, we got to look that up. Are you looking it up?
The Billy Bob, Sam Elliott.
Sam Elliott. All of a sudden, you get a Sam Elliott voice. Dude, I would love.
Yeah, I could never go that deep.
I would love to have that voice, though. Do you think Sam Elliott? Well, I mean, he's a handsome man, but like Sam Elliott from the movie Roadhouse. Do you remember him when he was like Roundhouse? Yeah. Do you think that guy just got a ton of chicks back in the day?
Had to have.
Had to have.
How could he not have?
Yeah, I'm Sam Elliott. Yeah. Yeah. Oh my God. Anyway. Well, I guess we'll never know.
Yeah. And
he's still alive, but unless he comes out with like a memoir. Yeah. We're never going to talk to him. Okay. So we got a big thing coming up today for our family.
Ooh, what are you doing?
Big thing. We're going to the Savannah Bananas game in Iowa City.
Oh, right.
Yep.
And that's cool. I didn't know you're doing that.
Yep. Kinnick Stadium. So they've been doing this thing lately where they've been traveling around the country playing in college football stadiums, which is crazy. Only because they hold more people than a baseball. And so they've like one part of the field is really short with a high net, and then they get like you can it's like a I don't know a 200 foot home run or something like that, whatever it case would be, maybe a little bit more, but easier to hit it out. And then right field is usually like 125 yards to hit it out, you know what I mean? And so it's gonna be fun. However, I don't know if you ever find, I used to really anticipate things like that, but as I get older, I almost ruin my own fun by like overdoing the thinking and logistics. And then while I'm there being like, okay, where's my kid? Hey, don't run out in traffic, grab the traffic. Okay. Do you have the keys? Like overthinking all of it. Do you ever do that?
Yes, I do. And I have to say, I think that it's starting to get better as my kids are starting to get a little bit older, that they will kind of more naturally stick around and they're less, I mean, my son, he's very impulsive, but I still think generally speaking, he's a little safer. He now like doesn't want to go to the bathroom by himself in a crowded place. And like, you know, or his like younger him would have run off and had no fear at all. Like he's developing like a healthy understanding of the world.
Yeah.
So I think it's getting a little easier to go out.
Yeah. I don't know.
I do get stressed though about like a big event, like you're going to go to, where it's like, dude, is it going to suck that there's going to be like a 2 mile walk between where we have to park and the thing? And like, is that going to suck? Is it going to be 90 degrees with 85% humidity? And are we just going to be baking in the sun? Like, how fun is that going to be? Like, my mind does go there. Like, when I was a kid, before I had kids, I was like, fuck it, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. you know? See these, I don't know if you ever see these young parents. This is also I don't know. Maybe it's, I judge other parents sometimes. Like, I had a Bible study yesterday and I was talking to, Brody about this. And I was like, sometimes I've been known to judge people, even though I hated being judged, back in the day.
Yeah.
So like I see a parent in like 95 degree heat with a baby and I'm like, get that kid out of the sun, dude. Like you're a horrible parent. Why is this kid here? And maybe they have fans and cold water and they're in the shade even. And I'm just like, that baby needs to be in air conditioning. And I have to remember that the entire United States was formed and babies were made without, and they were probably wearing wool diapers and shit like that
right.
before air conditioning was even a thing. Right. So who am I to sit there and just judge that parent for being here?
Oh yeah.
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 I don't know.
That's an interesting concept. Just generally speaking of, trying not to be judgmental.
Yeah.
At all. And live and let live and recognize people are doing the best they can.
Yeah, that's a fact. I don't know what it is. I'm getting older. Have you ever done this? Tell me the truth. Have you ever done this and caught yourself doing something that your dad did that annoyed the shit out of you when you were younger?
Boy, you know, there are probably things. The one thing that comes to mind is, I think sometimes I'm like, the older I get, the more every once in a while I'm like, you know what? I don't need to take a shower today.
Yeah.
my dad's notorious for like not thinking he needs to like take a shower.
Okay.
Whereas kids were like, what are you doing? That's crazy.
Yeah.
But he's just like, it's just like one more thing. Like when you're freaking tired and I don't know, it's just one more thing. I still do, just for everybody listening.
I am clean.
I can understand I can understand the mentality of like, I just don't feel like doing one more thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you feel like you've hit in certain aspects of your life, like a kind of like a fuck it stage where you're just like, dude, I used to care about some of these things and now I don't care at all about those things.
Yeah. My lawn sadly is one of those. Like I used to have a perfect lawn before life got busy. Like my lawn was awesome. I kind of used to battle in a fun way with my next door neighbor.
Yeah.
Cause I'm a bit of a perfectionist. He's a bit of a perfectionist. Our lawns were like really, really nice.
Yeah.
Well watered, perfectly manicured, not a weed to be found, trimming the edges all the time, all the things. And like, dude, life's just gotten so busy. That's just fallen so far down on the priority list. And I'm just like, fuck it. It's alive.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So my front yard looks like a jigsaw puzzle of a whole bunch of pieces that don't match. So like we had my neighbor across the street, Pete, he built a ramp, like a bicycle ramp for my boys. And then it laid out in my grass for like just about 3 days too long and it killed all the grass underneath of it. So then I moved it to a different spot and it laid there for a couple days and then that killed that grass. So now I have all these different patches of different variety of grasses and weeds growing in my yard. And I am just like, whatever.
I'm with you. As long as the grass isn't 8 inches tall, screw it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I've also told myself like someday if I ever end up caring again, it will be easy enough to bring back to being nice.
Right. Right.
The lawn's not that important.
For years, the lawn used to be the thing. Like, do you remember back in the day where like the dads were really picky about the lawns? And maybe some dads still are, but it was almost a status at one point.
You
know what I mean?
I think that's true. And I think that's still a thing. I think I was in that. I really liked having my lawn be awesome. Yeah. It's a thing that you can control. It's like a project that you're constantly managing in a hopefully a fun way. It's rewarding in the way that it has immediate gratification when you mow and make it beautiful. Like, you know, your job, you don't get immediate gratification from it. There isn't like, you didn't like produce a thing that you can see have an impact immediately. But when you mow the lawn, every stripe you make is like, ooh, that's better. Ooh, that's better. Ooh, that's better. And it just gets better and better.
Yeah, that's a fact. Okay. So we kind of BS'd there for a little bit, right? I just remember, I don't know what movie it is. It might have been Wolf of Wall Street, where the one guy tries to get right into business. And then he goes, you know what? It is customary in our country for 10 minutes of conversation before we discuss, you know, business. And the guy was like, no, we're getting right into it right now. So I think we've done that, right? Maybe not 10 minutes, but we got it. We did our customary BS. Yeah.
What happened?
I said, so the Wi-Fi just went out. And yeah. So I call downstairs and I go, hey guys, I need all the Wi-Fi right now. I want you to go unplug the Rokus downstairs and in the back bedroom. But dad, I'm watching a video about how to make a paper airplane. And I'm like, I don't care. This takes priority. I'm like, but dad, this is a really good paper airplane design. And I'm like, buddy, if I have to come downstairs right now, like I'm going to be hot. Please go do this for me. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I will work on, you know what? I will work on you with you on paper airplanes later and we'll make a totally sweet one. Right now I need the Wi-Fi.
I need the Wi-Fi. Also, yeah. I don't know. My youngest son is on this kick. I don't know. We ran out of like dipping sauce for his chips. And so he was looking for something to dip his Ruffles. It's got to be Ruffles cheddar cheese chips. That's his thing now. Fair. And he found cottage cheese. And now he's in this thing where it's like every snack is him dipping Ruffles, cheddar cheese, cheddar flavored chips into the cottage cheese. And so that's what we're dealing. That's what his diet is right now.
Hey, you know what? That could be a lot worse, actually. Like if he's just pounding, you know, buckets of chips, that's one thing. But like cottage cheese, that's pretty good for you,
I guess.
Good. All right.
So good for us as parents has been like, I guess it's okay enough, right?
Yeah. We had to see some protein in there.
All right. So at the end of the last episode, we were talking a little bit about what to talk about on this episode, and we took down some notes. What are those notes that we were going to talk about?
You had said, generally speaking, that you wanted to talk about the concept of walking on eggshells. Mm-hmm. And you didn't say where that was coming from for you. You just said that you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah.
where was that coming from for you?
Well, I think there's times when I get stressed out, people know it, and they walk on eggshells for me. I know that there's other times in the house where other individuals are stressed out, and we understand if we go any further, then it's going to just get worse for everybody, right? And so whether that's me or my wife or some of the kids, we walk that's the term, right? We walk on eggshells to avoid any conflict, right? And there's times where it's weird. It feels weird because you know somebody is doing something that they don't want to do for you to avoid some kind of conflict. Or you're also doing something where you're just like, maybe I'm turning to the kids. And if the wife is stressed out, I'm turning to the kids and I'm like, hey, listen, like you want to get mom fired up? You keep doing what you're doing, you know, and maybe I'm an asshole to somebody else for that reason, right? Just to prevent a nuclear explosion in the house. And wow. I was kind of curious, like from your professional standpoint, if that is something that you have seen and what that term means to you, and if like you run into that a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very common. It can happen in lots of different types of relationships. It's more likely in some types of relationships than others. Mm-hmm. Usually, so there's a handful of reasons why it can happen. One reason is because the person that you're dealing with is very unpredictable. You don't know what you're going to get from them. And so you're always trying to keep the water smooth with them.
Yeah.
Another reason it can happen is if you if you get like frequent criticism or anger from that person,
yeah,
if that person's always criticizing, if that person's always angry, then you're going to try to like not poke the bear. You never want to stir them up.
Right.
All of this is about keeping the peace, by the way, and not making waves.
Yeah.
The question is, I guess it kind of boils down to two things. Someone's either walking on eggshells because the person they're dealing with is like unpredictable and kind of a hothead, and like you think it could go really bad for you if you make them mad. Mm-hmm. That's one direction. Or the other direction you could walk on eggshells would be because you are so conflict averse that you just can't even bring anything up. Right. Even if the other person might be reasonable and rational, but you just can't handle conflict. So you know, you're always kind of trying to keep the peace in one direction or the other. There could be past experiences with someone else that makes you walk on eggshells with the person that you're with now. Or maybe you've witnessed some big explosion from that person. It might even be out of character, but if you saw like a big explosion, or if they like melted down or decompensated, you just start walking on eggshells around them because you don't ever want that to happen again.
Yeah.
Another reason it can happen, I'm just gonna throw all these reasons out, then you give your feedback. Another reason that people walk on eggshells is if there's a power difference in the relationship. And so then obviously it's a person with the less power walking on eggshells around the person with the most power, because they're afraid about upsetting them, and they're afraid of having negative consequences for upsetting them.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last reason is, if you have fear of losing the relationship, like you're afraid you're going to be rejected or abandoned, or you're going to damage the relationship, by having conflict, so you just don't ever, and that could be warranted. Like the person that you're dealing with is a hothead, or that could just be a fear that you're going to lose the relationship.
All right, guys, you know me, and I love eating wild game, but I don't eat wild game every single night. Every once in a while, I'll reach for a side of beef, and that's why I trust Omaha Steaks. Because Omaha Steaks are sent directly to my door, I can keep my freezer stocked without having to go to the grocery store. It's honestly like having a trusted butcher and gourmet food shop right at your house. Last week, I pulled out their pure ground ribeye burgers for a quick grill session. The flavor and marbling was unreal, rich, juicy, and miles ahead of any average grocery store meat. Try the Burger Perfection Flight at omahasteaks.com today. That's 20 premium steak burgers for just $79.99. Plus, get $35 off with promo code BEEF. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code BEEF for $35 off at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. I've been trying Underbrush from Nathan and Sons, and it's not really regular gum. It's remineralizing chewing gum, basically an oral care routine in gum form. You brush in the morning and at night, but after lunch, there's a big gap where most of us do nothing for our teeth. Underbrush is made for that moment. Chew it for 5 to 10 minutes, spit it out, and move on. Or keep chewing it if you like the feel of it. It's made with something called hydroxyapatite. That's the same mineral your enamel is made from, and natural saps like mastic and spruce. So it has a firmer, really satisfying chew. The company is only a few years old, and the team is literally making, packing, and shipping gum every day. So if you want a simple daily upgrade for your teeth, check out Underbrush from Nathan and Sons. Check them out today at nathanandsons.com.
Yeah. Yeah. There's times where have I ever told you about Volcano Dad?
Mm-hmm.
I've told you about Volcano Dad, right? So that's where I give everybody in my family a mile long leash. You do whatever you want. Like, you chill. If you're respectful, dude, I don't care. Like, I'm cool dad, right? But if I have told you and warned you, and cool dad starts to fade away, I don't really have like a, and maybe this is a side of me I need to work on, but I don't really have a side of me that gets like gradually more angry, right? Okay. I'm like, hey, third, you know, warning 1 through 7 is just cool dad being, hey guys, do me a big favor, pick up your sock. hey guys, do me a big favor. Can you just pick this one sock up? I've already told you 3 or 4 times. Hey guys, can you get off the device? I've told you I need to use the Wi-Fi. Hey guys, can you please help out? And then here comes out of nowhere, get off the fucking internet. I told you right now. And then just explode, right? The house windows shake. And I'm just like, then what happens is everybody's cool, right? Or not cool, but the house is quiet.
Yeah.
Right? And people are walking on eggshells for me.
Yeah.
Right? When people have to walk on eggshells, is that a sign of respect or is that more done out of fear, in your opinion?
Fear.
Fear. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not a respect response. Yeah. They've been shocked. Now they're in fear mode. Now they're in kind of self-protection mode. So they're not wanting to make waves.
Yeah. Have you ever run into this? And I don't know why I'm using this particular example as the example, but a scenario where like a woman is potentially abused or she's in a relationship where she is, I don't know whether it's verbal or physical, but maybe some abuse there. And then the mom actually like gets pissed at the kids because she knows that if she doesn't get pissed at the kids or angry at the kids, then the husband will come in and just demolish everything. And then she's walking on, she's changing who she really is to her children or, you know, use whatever scenario for another person just to avoid conflict with another person.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean that can definitely happen. I think that's a dynamic that does happen. Then there's one parent is volatile, so the other parent is like always running interference.
Yeah,
always trying to be the buffer.
Yeah,
and they can go about that any number of ways. That sounds like you're saying in that scenario, like that the second parent becomes kind of tries to be the authoritarian, so that the kids don't trigger the volatile parent.
Yeah.
You know, I think what happens more often than that is that the, let's call parent one, the volatile one that everybody's trying to avoid, and let's call parent two, the buffer. And then there's the kids. My guess would be that it'd be more common for parent two to become really, really placating. Like, I'll give you anything you want if you just be quiet.
Yeah.
You know, or doing a lot of avoiding behaviors like, oh, let's get out of the house so that we don't upset parent one. Yeah. All kinds of stuff like that, like constantly trying to stay ahead of problems. That's usually what, in my experience, that's usually what parent two does.
Yeah.
But I could see that being a thing where parent two tries to crack down on the kids so that they don't upset parent one. But either way, like in almost every, maybe this is too much of an overstatement, so I'll just preface it with that. But maybe in every situation where there's where people are walking on eggshells, it's usually that the person that people are having to walk on eggshells around is unhealthy in some way and needs to do some work. I'm not saying they're a bad person. I'm just saying like that person that needs to be walked on eggshells around is, in my experience, kind of an exposed nerve that they can't handle the stress of life. Or maybe they are under so much stress that, they're now in freak out mode all the time that if anything scratches the surface, you're going to get a big blow up from them.
Yeah.
And I don't want to demonize a person like that. Like there's a chance that they came to that point by no fault of their own. Like maybe life was really that hard. But there also could be a chance that life was hard as it is for lots of people. And maybe that person didn't have the coping skills, the coping mechanisms to like deal with that.
Yeah.
So it could be a combination of the two. Usually, I mean, it's a pretty bad scenario when somebody's walking on eggshells. That if I ever hear that, that means that things have gotten pretty bad.
Yeah.
That's a really stressful situation to live under, because when you're around somebody you have to walk on eggshells around, It means that you are constantly self-monitoring, which means you can never let your guard down, which means you can never relax and you can never just be. You're always attending to their, you're keeping an eye on their thermostat at all times.
Yeah.
At all times. And also your own and also everyone else. So then you can become hypervigilant. So like parent two is like kind of not even getting a chance to monitor themselves. They're like always monitoring partner one and the kids and everybody else. And that's a pretty stressful way to live life.
That's a fact. How would you suggest someone who's been walking on eggshells for several years, and maybe is this the right word, stands up for themselves or approaches the volatile one in the relationship to basically just be like, enough of this shit. I don't like walking on eggshells for you anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I wish I had a great answer for this. I feel like it could be more situationally dependent. Mm-hmm. Also, different people respond to different things. Because a partner two could potentially go to partner one, like calmly, lovingly, and say, hey, like this, do you notice these patterns that we have going on in the house? Mm-hmm. Like this is untenable. This is really, really stressful. And we can't live like this anymore. And I love you and I want things to be better. And we need to figure out a way to have this be better. I think a lot of times it means probably that the volatile one ends up going to counseling so that they have a place to like sort through stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, for the person who is volatile to get better, like they have to have some insight that they are volatile. And that's true for change for almost everybody. If somebody's going to change, they have to start agreeing that they have a problem.
Yeah.
And so like, if I'm putting myself in the situation, if I were to approach, let's say hypothetically, my wife was the volatile one and it was like wreaking havoc on our family.
Yeah.
I think I would gather some really good evidence to back up my points. And I think I would try to talk to her really, really calmly, and back it up with points. I wouldn't do any like blaming. I wouldn't do any name calling. I would try really hard to not make it an attack. And I would bring all of the negative things to her attention. Like, look at what's happening here. Look, look at the kids' behaviors. Like, this isn't good.
Yeah.
And the thing is, like, that person's pretty likely to be defensive.
Yeah.
And say, well, if they would just da da da, and if you just wouldn't da da da, you could say, fair. Like, I'm willing to talk about all of that.
Yeah.
Talk about all of our parts in this. Like, are you willing to talk about your part too?
Yeah.
I would try to get some buy-in.
When do you think would be a good time to do that? Would that be during the actual blow up, during the actual time, or do you let something like that settle? And then you come to them at a later time and just be like, hey, do you remember this from yesterday?
Yeah. Do it. My advice would be to do it when it's calm.
Mm-hmm.
Usually people who are volatile, once their brain, this is true for most people, actually, once their brain is hijacked, like nothing is sacred, like they'll burn their own house down just to like not lose the argument or, once they're mad, they're mad. And so usually anything you bring up at that time, that's not going to be a good time to bring it up. But if you can talk about it when things are calmer and you're able to like back it up with real examples and real evidence and you're not doing it in an attacking, like blaming sort of way, but in a like, hey, I love you and I love our family. This needs to get better sort of way. I think that's the better way to go about it. I might even be like, hey, here are my concerns. Here's my evidence for this. Here's how I want things to be. Do you agree? Like, can you see where I'm coming from? And then also, what do you think you would need for things to be better around here? And what are you willing to do? And what do you need from me? To try to make it like a family buy-in type of thing.
So that's great, right? You know, hype, like that's the best way to do it. That sounds awesome. But what happens when you do that and the person you're approaching then says, oh, you really want to make me happy? Give me this, 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 make this happen, do this, 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 and then this, this, this. And then it just becomes checking boxes instead of actually any type of reflection. Yeah. And then what happens is they've potentially used your willingness to walk on eggshells as leverage to get more of what they want.
Yeah. Yeah. Then that will be the next thing to call out. Like, hey, yeah, you said you wanted A, B, C, D, E, and F, and I did all of those things, mm-hmm, and you are still behaving the exact same as you did before. So right, that tells me that it wasn't those things.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and I'd say, hey, it's time for you to start focusing on how you can be happy regardless of those other things.
Yeah. 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 Aside from physical abuse, because I think if you're going to hit somebody, right, that's an entire different problem, yeah, right, that needs to be addressed. But aside, yeah, from physical abuse, I've noticed, and this kind of goes back to when I was younger, to avoid fights, I would be ultra aggressive, right? Like someone would be, hey, you want to go? I'd be like, yeah, let's fucking go, buddy. Right. And then like my eyes get big. And usually what happens is that person now knows that you're willing to go into, yeah, that fight. And even though inside I didn't want to fight, but I was willing to go to a point of craziness in order to get my point across. And I know that's not a bad example and something you obviously don't want to do with children, but like calling out someone like that and being like, hey, I've walked on eggshells enough for you, right? You're an asshole. That's your problem, right? And this entire family, you know, does everything for, you know, is the way that we are for you. And just call them out in almost like meeting fire with fire. Does that help or hurt in an example like that?
To be super honest with you, I think, and other, you know, other counselors listening to this might disagree. I think it's a case by case basis. I think somebody might respond to that. Like, yeah, what could be a wake up call for one person could be a fuel for the fire for another person.
Right.
It's hard to say, right, how somebody would react to that. Some people react well to like an ultimatum, like, hey, if, mm-hmm, you don't, like if you don't change this, I have to leave, because like being with you is like standing here holding my hand on the stove, and, mm-hmm, I'm trying really hard to tolerate this, but I can't hold my hand on the stove forever. So like, yeah, I need you to turn the temperature down so, mm-hmm, that I can be around you, because I do, right, want to be around you, but you're gonna lose me if, yeah, if you keep this up, because this isn't cool being around you like this. And sometimes that's enough to make the other person go, holy shit, okay. Yeah. And also sometimes it's not. And sometimes people get called out on their behaviors and it's a wake up call. And sometimes people get called out on their behaviors and they can't tolerate it and they just fly off the deep end even more.
Yeah.
It's hard to say. You know, I usually encourage people to go to couples counseling and have it be framed in such a way that like, this isn't going to be a blame session. I'm not going to throw you under the bus. I want us to figure out how we can make things better together.
Yeah.
Rather than a, you're broken, you need to be fixed. Go fix, yeah, yourself.
Yeah.
It's too bad when one person's gotten that far and doesn't have the insight to recognize that the impact that they're having on their family. But that's why I said earlier, to when you do approach the person, to have your points well thought out, with your evidence, and do it in a non-accusing way.
Yeah.
You know, like, and have a lot of love, sprinkled in there too. Like, you know, love you so much and you're an integral part of this family. Your frustration level has gotten really high and stayed really high. And I understand that it makes sense to me. And so you're not wrong for that. And also it is having an impact. And, yeah, so something needs to change. And you know, part of that can be the environment, but we've already done a lot to try to change the environment to make it better. So the other side of the equation might be like you learning how to de-stress and deal with stress better. Like, would you be willing to go to counseling and learn how to better manage stress? And yeah. Like, I've noticed that some of your thought processes are really negative. Like, whenever something happens, you get so negative about it. And then I watch you work yourself up. Like, would you be willing to go to counseling just to focus on your thought processes so mm-hmm. that you can be happier? Like, I love you. I want to see you happier.
Yeah.
It's not a big blame thing. Like, fuck you. You're being a fucking bitch. You're ruining our family. Go yeah. fix yourself or we're kicking you out of the family. Like yeah. that would not be the message I would use. Be yeah. like, hey, I love you. I hate to see you suffering and angry and upset all the time. Mm-hmm. I think part of it's the stress of life, fair enough, but I also think part of it is how you deal with that.
Right.
And I can see your negativity and the negativity in your thought processes. Would you be willing to go to counseling to address those thought processes and to address stress management to see if it would be helpful?
Right. Right. And, you know, we've been focusing on anger here, but I'm sure there's other examples of walking on eggshells for people, like sadness, where, you know, like something happens and you're trying to avoid them crashing to like into a depression spiral or something yeah. like that.
Yeah. Yeah. If you think somebody's really delicate or really fragile.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sometimes that's accurate. And also sometimes it's not.
Yeah. 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 This kind of moves into this thought process that I have of people change, right? And so what is your experience when it's maybe a relationship, or like you heard me talk earlier about how I almost can't go out in public and enjoy myself anymore because I'm overthinking the logistics of everything. Like, okay, we parked here, we put 2 hours into a parking meter, we got to get back by this time, you know, like, hey, we got to go here. And I used to be this free-flowing, let's go do all of whatever, and if we get towed, big whoop, we'll go bail ourselves out and shit like that. And I've kind of changed into this more live inside of a box type person almost. Mm-hmm. And that a lot of that has changed since I stopped drinking, to be yep. honest with you. And so I'm curious, when two people they've met, maybe this is a marriage. This is like, obviously this is marriage. They've met, they fell in love with each other. They said, I like this person. Oh, I like this person. Now I love this person. Well, I love them. Let's get married. Yes, I do. Let's go do this. And then 10, 12, 25, however long, they start to change as individuals, which now that tends to like, I don't like this person as much as I used to. I don't feel like, because they're doing something. Have you ever come across a scenario like that where now you have to like re-like somebody? Or fall in love with a different person again, a version of them?
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. And I'm not a marriage therapist. I would actually like to have a marriage therapist on this podcast again to like talk yeah. about that, like how to reconnect, mm-hmm. With your partner, how to re-like them. Yeah, I think that's extremely common. I also think that it's really, really easy to happen during, you and I have talked about the happiness curve over the lifetime, where yeah. when you're in your, you know, 30s to mid 50s, like when you're in your child rearing years and your career building years, that like you're at your lowest level of happiness because mm-hmm. there is so much stress happening and so much going on
yeah.
and there's so much less time for the couple to have fun and enjoy each other. That our mentality, I think everyone's mentality shifts over time. And if we're not purposeful with how that shifts, then it probably shifts in response to stressors.
Mm-hmm.
So what a person needs to do is be purposeful about how they're handling stress as they go and be like checking themselves. Like, how am I doing? And how do I want to do? How do I want to be? How do I feel? And how do I want to feel? How do I think compared to how I want to think? And like, it's kind of up to you to keep yourself between the guardrails. But some people don't even, this is going to sound more blamey than I mean for it to. Some people don't take the time to even establish their own guardrails. Like they kind of, it's like they're living life flying by the seat of their pants where they haven't thought of what type of person they want to be. Yeah. And so like, they're just living every day kind of reinventing the wheel and living every day in survival mode and living every day kind of like, well, whatever happens today is going to dictate the mood that I'm in, as opposed to being proactive and being like, all right, who am I? What type of person do I want to be? How do I want to be today? How do I want today to go?
Mm-hmm.
And choosing their attitude ahead of time. That's not a silver bullet, but man, you will be in a way better mood so much more of the time if you took time at the beginning of the day, even 30 seconds to look in the mirror and say, you know what? Today's going to be a good day.
Yeah.
I'm lucky for the things that I have. No matter what happens today, I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to try to have a positive attitude no matter what happens. Yeah. That 30 seconds right there primes your brain to be in a better mood. And that could be absolutely crucial. Then you could be that, to me, that ends up like this butterfly effect of like the waves that ripple out from that one choice in the morning to be in a good mood. What can happen then is like, let's say you're walking to the Savannah Bananas baseball game at 6:30 at night and there's the 2-hour parking meter and you're trying to remember where the hell you parked and it's a long walk and you got a bunch of shit in your hands. And if you would have primed your brain in the morning to be happy, then that when you're on that walk, you might be like, yeah, this is fine. I'm glad that my body's able to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy we got these tickets. Yeah, I'm going to be sweaty, but you know what? Who gives a shit? Everybody's going to be sweaty. Let's just embrace
the sweaty together.
Yeah, let's all go be sweaty together. You know, like, but if you didn't do that, 30-second priming in the morning, you might be like, oh, fuck this. This sucks. Why'd I do this? How'd I get drug into this? This is so far away. I'm going to be miserable the whole time. It's like, yeah, dude, either way, like the situation is the same either way. The only thing that changes is your mentality. But the point is, if you don't practice choosing your mentality is going to be a response to the stress of the situation.
Yeah. Okay. That's awesome. But you're in an argument, right? You're in, or maybe it's, we have the same argument every week. We have the same problems every week. And you alluded to it there. The word is how. How do I step back and how do I evaluate my role in what's going on? And how do I take a step back and before I blame others and say, my kids are the reason why I'm mad. My wife is the reason why I'm mad. How do I take a step back and, how do I do that? Because in this world, everybody is, it's so fast paced now that people are just full throttle into the next moment. And no one ever goes, hold up, wait a minute. And just like, let's think about, Dan Johnson needs to think about what Dan Johnson's doing right now in this whole thing.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to challenge that a little bit and say that, like, you know, you said, no one says, hold up, what am I doing? Mm-hmm. I'm actually going to say there are people that do that.
Yeah.
There are people that start their day with journaling for 5 minutes. There are people that end their day with journaling for 5 minutes. There are people who, listen to, healthy content while they work out. There are people who listen to helpful and healthy content while they drive. There are people who prioritize this in such a way that they go, you know what? 3 minutes might be kind of hard for me to do right now, but I think that's going to be a worthwhile investment.
Right.
There isn't like a silver bullet of, oh, I'll do this once and I'll feel way better. To me, it's a practice. And you're probably going to suck at it at first. And it might be kind of hard to fit in at first, but if you can get it going, I mean, I think having a good attitude is a lot like lifting weights and being in shape, that you can't lift weights once or for a good solid week and then be in shape for the rest of your life. It's like you have to build it up and then maintain it. And you're going to be weak at first, just like lifting weights. So if you have a weak mentality, that's not a judgment, just an observation. If a person has a weak mentality and they go, oh, you know what? Like, I don't like the way that I think, and they want to improve the way they think, they have to start focusing on that, and they're going to be weak at it at first. They're going to suck. Yeah. And you have to be willing to suck at first. But it has to be a thing that's important to you. And then, like I said, even 30 seconds of priming your brain. And that's a really important concept, priming. Mm-hmm. If you smile, your body can't help but feel a little happier. You know, if you get up in the morning, you just smile. Or if you're in the middle of your day, let's say you're neutral and you smile, that's going to tilt you more towards the positive. Let's say you're in a bad mood and you force yourself to smile, it's going to make you be in less of a bad mood. Like, there are things that you can do to prime your brain to be happier. And like I said, you know, there's you've probably heard of people like having mantras that they say to themselves or positive affirmations that they say to themselves in the morning. And it's funny that I think popular psychology has kind of like made that stuff really lame and dorky, which is too bad because there's actually a lot to it. That if you had positive affirmations that you would say to yourself in the morning, it can really prime your brain to have a much better day.
Yeah.
And because of the priming effect, if I were to say to you, let's use the bananas game tonight, like, hey, Dan, no matter what happens at this whole bananas experience, I want you to choose to have fun just for yourself. Yeah. Cultivate a feeling of fun for yourself, dude. It's going to be cool. I want you to look at the magic on your kids' faces when they see all the fun shit that the bananas players do. And I want you to just take in the awe of, you know, 70,000 people in Kinnick. Doing this rare thing. You're one of the only people that's ever going to get to be there for that experience, because it doesn't happen very often. It's the first time ever, and all of these things. You'll already start to be like, yeah. And it doesn't mean that you won't get irritated, but dude, you'll get less irritated. And when you're less irritated, it's easier to be happy.
Yeah.
When you're happy, it's harder to be irritated.
Yeah. They did something at my daughter's wrestling practice last night where they brought in a mirror and they held it up in front of the mirror, and they had to say something like, I am confident, I am this, I am, you know, she kind of went through that. But yeah, dude, I get how that works. I think I'm going to try start doing that. Like, we have a bathroom upstairs and a mirror. I think what I'm going to do is I might go downstairs after this, pull all the family in there and be like, I want to smile. I want you to look at the mirror and smile right now. And then if it's because I have this little inside running joke with my wife where I'm like, hey, can I get one of your famous fake smiles? And then she'll be like that. And it, I don't know, it maybe lightens the mood just a little bit, but I might actually try to get her to really smile and be like, hey, if you were posing for a picture right now, I want to see a genuine smile right now. Make yourself do it. And I want to see if that challenge goes through or if I get, like, she starts to hate me today. So
you know, or it could even turn into a funny, silly thing.
Yeah,
but whatever I do. And let's say that your first attempt at like helping your family prime their brains to be happy, let's say the first attempt crashes and burns, so what? Try again. Yeah. Keep trying, and then you'll find the way that clicks for you and your family. But the happiness and having a good attitude is a thing that is cultivated. It doesn't just happen.
Right.
You know, and like, life is hard for everyone, but dude, you've seen, so life is hard for everyone. Some people are able to have a way better attitude than others, and I don't think that's by happenstance. I think it's because they've made that happen on purpose. Mm-hmm. A really poignant example to me, and I have no military background, and I respect our military members, but just a really neat thing, I think, is I've only heard stories of this, that like Marines will go to boot camp and it fucking sucks, and the whole point of it is to fucking suck. The point isn't even really the physical fitness, it's to put those guys through hell to break them down, to make them like give up on their ego, to just shred them. And then for the, then to rebuild them together as a unit that trusts each other.
Yeah.
And the, and that buys into the system.
Yeah.
And so basically the, my understanding, and I am totally open to being corrected on this, but the whole point of the system is not like, ooh, see if you can get through this hard thing. And if you do, that's good. It's more like, oh, we're just going to make this harder and harder and harder until you break.
Yeah.
Like no one wins. Like you don't get to win it. It's just,
yeah,
it's going to get harder until you break. And so what a thing that can happen with the Marines is that as they're breaking them down and doing these horrible things and taking them past their failure, and they're laying in the waves, getting splashed in their face, or they're, you know, there's five of you carrying a gigantic log above your heads and everybody's arms are dead and nobody can do it anymore. And the drill sergeant's like, I don't give a fuck. Keep doing it. Mm-hmm. And the guys are like, oh my God, how are we going to do this? At some point, there's a turning point where the guys start like joking with each other.
In the suffering.
Yeah, in the suffering, and they're like, hey, hold your end up, pussy.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, I'm holding this whole fucking log. You're not doing shit. You know? Or they'll start singing songs to pretend like it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Or they'll be like, you know, they'll be about to die, and they'll be like, is that all you got, Jill Sergeant? This is fucking easy work.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, their mentality starts to shift. And then the phrase that I heard from them that I just think is so fucking cool, the phrase is embrace the suck.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, stop wanting the shittiness to stop. Stop having your happiness be dependent upon the situation getting better. And instead, figure out how to make how to be okay in a shitty situation.
Yeah.
And when I heard that story, I was like, boom.
Yeah. Light switch moment.
Yeah, dude. It just about gives me goosebumps talking about it because life just is stressful.
Yeah.
And to think that it's not going to be is ridiculous.
Yeah.
And so recognizing that your attitude actually doesn't have to be attached to how shitty the thing is, is incredible. So embrace the suck and find a way to have the difficulty of life be fun and like cultivate goofing off with your wife and with your kids while you're packing for the frickin' baseball tournament where, you know, it's going to be four games and it's 98 degrees and 83% humidity. And it's like, hey, let's get ready to soak through our underwear today. How many pairs of underwear are you bringing? You know?
Yeah. That's
find
hilarious.
Find a way to cultivate a good attitude. Cause I think a myth is that it like just happens. Like you should just be able to just be in a good mood. Like, no, you shouldn't just be able to be in a good mood. You have to figure out how to be in a good mood.
Right. I like this. I saw, you know, during one of my toilet bowl scrolls, I call them.
Oh, yeah.
I ran across this like fitness instructor, and he they're in front of the guy. He was like, there was like one weight, maybe it was 30 pounds, so pretty easy to just pick up, right? And so he said to the guy, I want you to pick that weight up. The guy picks it up. He goes, no, set it down. Now what I want you to do is to try to pick this weight up. And he looked at him confused, and he went down and he picked it up again. He goes, no, set it down. I need you to really, really try to pick this weight up. And the guy's like, thought it was his form or something. And he picks the weight up. He goes, here's the deal. There's almost like a Yoda moment. There is no try. You just do it or you don't do it. Right. And when you have that type of do it or don't do it, right, you just do it. And I think when it comes to people's attitudes, emotions, and things like that, if you want to get better, just get better, you know, pending any type of like actual psychological disorder or things like that, right? Like severe depression or things like that. Just get better. Maybe a medicine would help a person. But when it comes to like just an average person having a good or bad day, I think if you just have a good day, just have a good day. Okay. Like if people stopped there for a moment and was just like, you know what, today I'm having a good day. I'm not going to try to, I'm just going to do it. I think the world would be a better place.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that could work for a lot of people. I think I saw that same exact video.
Yep.
If that clicks with people, then that's awesome. I probably have a little bit different mentality about that I'm I'm more likely to lean towards try and keep trying and try and fail and then try better and learn from every iteration of what you did and just hang in there and don't give up is probably more, you know, I think sometimes things can click in your mind, like I'm just going to do it. And that's cool.
Yeah.
I have one experience of that where one day I was just like, you know what? I'm fucking done eating sugar. I'm a fat ass. This isn't good. I'm done with this shit. Knock it off, Kyle. And I didn't eat another bite of sugar for a year. And there was no try there. I was just like, I just decided. And so that was a moment. But I don't have a lot of moments in my life like that where I was just like, I'm doing this and just did it. Like, because you actually don't know if you're going to be successful or not. Well, there's lots of different mentalities out there.
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe that's not maybe my way of that example is just not, doesn't work. But I feel like if we just do it, like, obviously you can't just get under 225 pounds on the bench press and be like, I'm going to will myself to do this. That's impossible, right? Like, you're not going to do that. But when it comes to like a mental, an attitude or maybe a behavior, maybe that's just what a person needs to just go, you know what? I'm just done. I'm done feeling this way. I'm going to feel, let me ask you this question. Can you fake it? Can you fake it, which actually turns into, like, can you fake happiness? Can you fake a good mood to the point of like actually it becoming that thing? And the reason I say that is because there was periods of my life where I kind of came up with this phrase in my head where I was like, eat the shit sandwich. If you're in a bad place and life hands you a shit sandwich, you just eat it.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah, I actually like when you say that. Just going real quick to, you know, the do or do not, there is no try. I think to me, the sentiment there is like, if you say you're going to try, that means you're not fully committed. You're already expecting to fail. You're leaving yourself an out. So in that way, I do like the, like, I'm just doing this, which you could say, I'm just doing this. And then every time you fall, you get back up. And that's all part of like, I'm doing this. It's like, I'm not trying to do this. I'm doing this. Well, you failed. It's like, I haven't failed. I'm just not there yet. I'm still doing it. Yeah. It's like, I'm going to bench 225 pounds. So you try and you didn't do it. And it's like, well, did you fail? You're like, no, I'm still benching 225. I just haven't done it yet.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not leaving myself an out. I'm not expecting to fail. Mm-hmm. I am committed. So in that way I do, in that way I do like that, you know, try, because it, as long as it leaves room for like, trying means that every time you fail, that it's not an excuse to give up.
Right.
Okay. So now on to the, basically you're talking about the phrase fake it till you make it. Can you fake it at first? Actually, yes, you can. There's a shift in the language though that I prefer. I don't like the phrase fake it till you make it.
Yep.
I prefer the phrase act as if. So I wouldn't say fake being happy until you're happy. I would say act as if you're happy and see what happens.
Okay.
Because if you, the problem to me, and it's fine if other people disagree, but the problem to me with fake it till you make it is like, you know, you're bullshitting yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, this is dumb. I know I'm putting on an act. But with act as if, it's like, yeah, I'm experimenting with what this is like.
Okay.
I'm not pretending like I'm something that I'm not. I'm just seeing what it's like to do this. You know, it would be like so fake it till you make it. Let's use wrestling for an example. Let's say let's use your daughter for an example. She's awesome. Yeah. She's young. Let's say that she were to go wrestle with like a bunch of senior girls that are super fucking legit.
Yeah.
And she's, you know, she's awesome, but she's not at their caliber yet.
Yeah.
Should she fake it and pretend like she really thinks she is that good, even though she knows she's not, and she's going to get beat and it's going to suck? Or should she go, you know what? Let me go into that wrestling room and let me act like I belong here, and let me see what this feels like.
Yeah.
I think both ways gets you in the room.
Yeah. And either way, right? Like either way, weakness is exposed in a mm-hmm. scenario like that. And mm-hmm. you're going to find out whether or not you have it or not. Yeah. Right. And yeah. so I guess the outcome is potentially the same, but yeah. how you go through what your mindset is going through the process. Cause I can see fake it till you make it all of a sudden. That having that mentality is doubt creeps in and mm-hmm. doubt turns to not giving your full potential. Mm-hmm. Act as if is, I like that phrase because to me it is, I'm going to go in here. I'm going to give it my best shot. I could still lose, but I know that I'm going to go hard until that actually happens.
That's exactly it. It's like, yeah. if you want to be like an incredible wrestler, then you need to act like an incredible wrestler acts. You don't need to like pretend like you're an incredible wrestler.
Yeah.
Like the reward, the benefit would be from doing all of the actual work.
Yeah.
So like if I saw, you know, people would say, oh my God, Michael Jordan worked out so hard. And anyone that ended up like going to work out with him got better because they acted like a person that's great.
Yeah.
That's different from like telling yourself you're great,
mm-hmm.
you know, cause then you don't, that like, that doesn't inherently come with the behaviors that it takes to make you great. So that's why I like act as if, so act as if you're happy, act, what would a happy person do? Do those things. What mm-hmm. would a disciplined person do? Do those things. What would a successful person do? Do those things. What would a fit person do? Do those things.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel you. So winding this episode down, are there any other things that we need to discuss, any topics we need to discuss when it comes to walking on eggshells for others? Or if you are picking up maybe signs that others are walking on eggshells for you?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a sign that things are unhealthy. Mm-hmm. It's a sign that something needs to change somewhere. Yeah. Oftentimes the person who needs to be walked on needs to be handled with delicacy. Something needs to be done to reinforce that person.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, you know, that's where the difficult part is, because a lot of times what needs to be done for that person needs to come from them. Like, you can't change anybody. And that's why it's really frustrating to be the loved one of somebody who's hard to deal with, or even just, you know, to see struggle. Like, you don't want to see your partner struggling to the point that like they're so frazzled that everybody's walking on eggshells around them. Like, that's too bad. But the truth of the matter is that they have to have the insight that that's what's happening, and they have to have the insight to want to change.
Yeah.
That phrase walking on eggshells, I could be mistaken here, but I think it comes from, literature around borderline personality disorder, which, by the way, not everybody that you have to walk on eggshells around has borderline personality disorder. It's just very well known that people who are in relationships with somebody with borderline personality disorder, they describe it as walking on eggshells around that person.
Gotcha.
Because they're volatile and they'll blow up. And then it's really nasty when they do. So then people with borderline personality disorder, better called emotional intensity disorder.
Yeah.
They can change, but it's really, really hard. And the only way that those folks change is if they buy into the idea that they need to.
Yeah.
And there are groups. So there's like a specific group format that has been developed to help people with borderline personality disorder. And it can be really successful, but it's actually designed for the client to go through multiple times, because it's almost assumed that they're going to get pissed off and frustrated and give up and say, fuck it. And then have to come back. But I've led a group that group like three times. And I've seen it happen where a person with emotional intensity disorder will come in and they'll be like, fuck you, fuck this, fuck that. Mm-hmm. Everybody, you know, the world sucks. If everybody else would just change, then I wouldn't be so pissed all the time, and da 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 da. And as they go through the program, they just start to learn more education about emotional management, and they start to see their impact on other people, and they start to try to apply the things that they're learning. It's even kind of funny. Like it's kind of endearing to me where it's like, we'll teach somebody a skill for emotional management and they'll be like, that's fucking stupid. That'll never work. And you're like, yeah, fair enough. I don't know. Go try it. then they'll come back. And I love when this happens. Then they'll come back to group the next week and they'll be like, I tried your stupid fucking skill. Yeah. Oh, yeah. What happened? It worked a little bit. I love that shit. And I'm like, yeah, okay, cool. Fair. Good job. That's awesome. You know, and I'll even be like, yeah, that skill is so dumb. Yeah. You know, keep trying.
Yeah.
But the point is though, it takes that person having the insight that they want to try to do things differently. Mm-hmm. But yeah, man, often the person that's in that position, they are really deep into whatever their thought pattern is that has got them that frazzled. And I think that needs to be, I think we need to have some empathy there for that person, but not so much empathy that we're enabling.
Right.
Because it's not fair. Like there is a toll that it takes on everyone else. And like that, those folks do end up losing relationships, and it does suck to have your own family members walking on eggshells around you, because it means you're not having as deep of a relationship with them as you could.
Yeah. I don't know if this will work on your wife or any of the listeners' wives, but my brother coined the phrase hug out the hate. And that is when, and I don't know if it would work for your wife. I would be afraid to try it on my wife, but it's called hug out the hate. And that's when they're in a very bad mood. All you do is just walk over to them and overpower them with just a bear hug to the point where they get even angrier. And then that anger just kind of turns into a chuckle. Because it's that the moment has passed, right? You hug it so long that that comes with a warning. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah.
Like, I'm not saying you should do it to your wife. I'm saying it might be an option. Yeah. Right. So,
well, what I like about that is it leans into like, find what works for you, find what works for your family, find what works for your partner, mm-hmm. be creative.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. Kyle. Great conversation today. If you, the listener, likes this Man Therapy podcast, please go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts, wherever you download or listen. Give us a 5-star review. Maybe leave a comment about how awesome Kyle is. And outside of that, everybody have a good weekend. And Kyle, have a good weekend. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
Have a good 4th.